Listening test 4. This is a listening practice test that resembles the International English Language Testing System listening test. The test consists of 4 sections. Answer the questions as you listen to the recording. Note that the recording will be played once only. Please turn to section 1. Listening section 1. In a moment, you will hear a conversation between 2 university students, Stephen and Claudia. It is their first day at the university, and they will both be attending the same lecture this morning. Before you listen, look at questions 1 to 6. First, Stephen and Claudia try to locate their lecture classroom. As you listen to the first part of the conversation, answer questions 1 to 6.
Well, Claudia, how is your first day on campus working out?
Actually, I'm overwhelmed. This campus is too large. I am not really sure how to get around it. How about you?
Yeah, I'm having the same problem. That's why we should leave a bit early to get to our biology class on time.
That sounds like a good plan to me. It's 9:30 right now. I think our class starts at 10 o'clock a.m.
Actually, it starts at 10:15 a.m., which leaves us 45 minutes to find it. The schedule says the class is at the Darwin Building, but I can't seem to find it on the map.
Since we both don't know where we are going, why don't you ask that woman sitting on the bench? She seems to know her way around here.
All right. It can't hurt to ask. Excuse me, miss. Could you tell us how to get to the Darwin Building?
The Darwin Building? Oh, yes, I remember. Do you see that building to our right there? That's the East Dormitory. Next to it is the Science Library. What you should do is follow the path between those two buildings until you reach the other side. Then take the left-hand path and follow it to the end. It leads straight to the Darwin Building. Got it? I think so. After we pass between the dorm and the library, we follow the path to the left until the end of the road. Then we should be there, right? Yes, that's perfect.
Stephen and Claudia later arrive at the lobby of the Darwin Building.
Well, we made really excellent time. We have 15 minutes to find the right classroom. Which room is it supposed to be in again?
It's supposed to be in Lecture Hall K. Who knows where that is? Well, the building has 10 floors. Why don't we start walking the halls? And then we...
Don't be silly. There's a much easier way. Let's look at the directory next to the stairs. Look here. It says that Lecture Hall A and C are on the second floor. Hall H, I, and J are on the 5th floor, and Hall K is on the...
10th floor. Come on, quick, let's find the lift. We have less than 10 minutes.
Why are you so lazy? Why don't we save ourselves the trouble and use the stairs? After all, we already know where the stairs are.
Are you out of your mind? Man invented the lift so that we don't have to act like primitives.
After all, we are in the Darwin Building.
Okay, Stephen, if you must insist on being lazy.
On second thoughts, let's take the stairs.
Stephen and Claudia read a sign that states that the lift is out of order and begin to take the stairs to the 10th floor.
Well, we're finally here, and it's exactly 10:15. I hope it doesn't take us this long next time.
If we're on time, why is nobody in the lecture hall?
This is strange. Are you sure today is the first day of class?
Of course. Oh, that's not the problem. The blackboard says there has been a schedule change, and class will start this Thursday instead of today.
You mean we spent 45 minutes to discover where we'll be this Thursday?
Well, at least we know where to go.
Later, Stephen and Claudia discuss her schedule for the rest of the week. Now look at questions 7 to 11. Note the examples that have been done for you. As the conversation continues, answer questions 7 to 11.
Well, today is turning out to be uneventful.
Maybe for you, but I still have two other lectures today. Every Tuesday, I have a biology class at 10:15, followed by classical literature at 11:30. I don't even get to eat lunch until close to 1 o'clock. Then at 2 o'clock, I have accounting until 15 minutes before 4 o'clock. By the end of the day, I'll be exhausted.
Ah, you make me want to study more often. What's the rest of your week like?
Wednesday is even worse. I have two tutorials, a lecture and a chemistry lab. The lab is first thing in the morning at 9 o'clock and doesn't end until 11:30. Then I have an hour of tutoring for biology, plus time for lunch. My next tutorial starts at 2:30 for classical literature and doesn't end until 3:45. Finally, at 4 o'clock, I have my chemistry lecture. I probably won't get home until after 6:30 for dinner.
You weren't kidding about being busy on Wednesday. How about the rest of the week?
Well, Thursday is identical to Tuesday, but Friday I only go to class from 10:30 until noon for my yoga class. It will give me a chance to rest up for the weekend.
That is the end of section 1. You now have 30 seconds to check your answers to section 1. Now turn to section 2. Listening, section 2. In a moment, you are going to hear a talk given by Hugh Thomas, a travel writer. He will be giving a talk about travel to Northern Ireland. Before you listen, look at questions 12 to 15. An example has been provided for you. As you listen to the first half of the talk, answer questions 12 to 15.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Hugh Thomas, and my profession is travel journalism. Some of you may have read my work in the travel book series, The Lonely Planet. Anyway, I'm not here to tell you about my job, but a magical place in the northeast of the UK called Northern Ireland. Now, I'm sure most of you have heard of this section of the UK, most likely because of the long history of fighting between the British and Irish governments over the territory. Nowadays, these problems have been settled, allowing the tourism industry to blossom. With a population of 279,240, Belfast, the capital of Northern Ireland, is a city that is quickly rebuilding and reinventing itself. Massive investment during the past few years, combined with the optimism engendered by the peace process, has transformed Belfast into something of a boom town. A string of upmarket hotels, including a Belfast Hilton, opened in the late 1990s, along with dozens of smart restaurants, bars and cafes. Step into a contemporary bar or restaurant, and it's difficult to avoid picking up a sense of excitement, a general feeling and buzz that after 30 years of fighting, Belfast is ready to join the rest of the world.
Now look at questions 16 to 23. Note the examples that have been done for you. As the talk continues, answer questions 16 to 23.
The city of Belfast is home to about 30% of Northern Ireland's population and is compact and easy to get around in, with most points of interest within easy walking distance of each other. Like any city worth its salt, Belfast contains some architectural and cultural gems, such as the impressive City Hall and the excellent Linen Hall Library. There are dozens of splendid Victorian pubs to explore, and for a city of its size, Belfast boasts a pretty good nightlife. The city is also pleasantly situated. The Belfast Hills are visible to the west. The rocks and green slopes of Cave Hill loom over the city to the north, and the sweep of Belfast Lough cuts into the city centre from the northeast. The city centre is compact, with the imposing City Hall in Donegal Square as a convenient central landmark. Belfast's principal shopping district is north of the square along and off Donegal Palace, Royal Avenue. The streets around here are in part a byproduct of the past fighting. At their height in the 1970s, terrorist activities turned the centre into a heavily militarised zone. But the security presence is very low-key now. A little further north, the once run-down area around Donegal Street and St. Anne's Cathedral, the Cathedral Quarter, is being rapidly redeveloped with trendy restaurants, bars and clubs springing up among the red brick warehouses and fortified pubs. Reminders of the Victorian era can be found in the stately buildings surrounding City Hall. In the narrow alleys, known as the entries, off Anne and High Streets, and in the ornate Grand Opera House and Crown Liquor Saloon on Great Victoria Street. Heading south from Donegal Square, Great Victoria Street and Dublin Road lead to University Road, where you will find Queen's University, the Botanical Gardens, and the Ulster Museum. There are dozens of restaurants and bars in this area. It is called the Golden Mile, and at night it's the most energetic and cheerful area of a generally hard-working city. Most of the city's accommodation options, including several hotels, are also south of the centre, around the University area. To the east of Donegal Square is Chichester Street, which runs down to Oxford Street, where you will find the Royal Courts of Justice, St. George's Market, the new Belfast Hilton, and the Waterfront Hall, a large conference and concert centre. East of the river are Samson and Goliath, the giant cranes dominating the Harland and Wolff shipyards. Well, I hope I have given you a good idea of the sights and places to stay in Belfast. Next, we will see some slides and talk about tours of the countryside.
That is the end of section 2. You now have 30 seconds to check your answers to section 2. Now, turn to section 3. Listening section 3. In a moment, you are going to hear an interview between Mr. Barry White, a radio interviewer, and Mrs. Carol Brady, a scientist working in the British fisheries industry. Before you listen, look at questions 24 to 31. Note the example done for you. As you listen to the conversation, answer questions 24 to 31. Our next guest is Carol Brady. Carol is a spokesperson with the British Fisheries Council. She's come here to chat with us about recent problems with the European Union and its effect on the fishing industry. How are you today, Carol?
I'm very well. Thank you for asking, Barry.
I must admit, something about our topic before we go on, Carol. I'm not too keen on fish, unless it comes with a side order of chips.
Well, don't worry about that, Barry. At least you are eating fish in your diet. After all, there are many benefits to your health if you include fish as one of your staples.
I wouldn't say I eat fish as often as that. It's just, well, you know, fish are so slimy.
Well, there are other reasons to eat fish other than its health benefits.
Oh, really? And what would they be?
Well, Britain is one of Europe's leading fishing nations. We operate in the continental waters, the North Sea, the Irish Sea, and the Atlantic. The fishing industry is important to the national economy and has been centered on a number of ports around the British coast.
Well, if it supports the economy, I suppose I should eat fish a bit more often.
That is a good idea, Barry. Because employment in and income from fishing have declined substantially in recent years.
Oh, really? And why is that?
Well, mainly this is due to the reduction in available fish stocks in European waters because of overfishing and fluctuations in fish breeding patterns. Many fishermen have become unemployed, and traditional fishing towns such as Grimsby and the Scottish ports have suffered. But the fishing industry still accounts for some 55% of Britain's fish consumption.
I feel so responsible. You know, tonight I'm going to fry some mackerel.
Really, Barry, you're so dramatic.
Well, I'm not joking. Currently, how many fishermen still find employment in the industry?
The number of fishermen is now about 17,000, with some 5,000 occasionally employed and about 3 jobs in associated occupations for every 1 fisherman.
I had no idea the industry was so large. Now, earlier in the program, I mentioned that currently, because of the EU, our fishing industry is in some trouble. Can you expand on this for our listeners?
Certainly, Barry. But the European Union is not the only institution causing these problems. The British government has also put some restrictions on the fishermen's ability to fish. The EU insists on the need to conserve fish resources and prevent overfishing. Zones have been established in which fishermen may operate.
And what happens inside these zones?
Now, EU countries and some non-members can fish in specified areas up to Britain's 10 kilometers fishing limit. Quota systems are enforced inside and beyond the zones in order to restrict fish catching to prescribed amounts. British government measures to limit the time fishing vessels spend at sea have further restricted employment. These EU and government policies have affected the fishermen's old freedom of choice and operation.
This problem sounds even more serious than the recent debate about waiting too long in line at the bank. What is being done about this problem?
Well, things have been improving. The conflicting interests of EU members and other nations have gradually been improved by fishing agreements.
Well, it's good to know that the situation is coming under control.
Actually, there are still a lot of problems. Critics argue that the British government have not acted in the best interests of their own national fisheries. Many fishermen are angry about the new policies, EU quotas and fishing zones, and their resulting loss of livelihood.
Yes, but if there isn't fish conservation, these fishermen will not have jobs in the future anyway.
Yes, I'm afraid the problem is quite complicated.
On a lighter note, what kind of fish are British waters famous for?
The most important British fish catches are cod, haddock, whiting, herring, mackerel, plaice, sole, and various types of shellfish.
I've heard that the fish farming industry has been expanding here in the UK. Tell our listeners a little about this subject, if you would, please.
The fish farming business is a large and expanding business, particularly in Scotland, and in chiefly concerned with salmon, trout and shellfish.
Well, I'm afraid we're out of time. I want to thank our guest, Carol Brady, from the British Fisheries Council. Thank you, Carol. That is the end of Section 3. You now have 30 seconds to check your answers to Section 3. Now turn to Section 4. Listening Section 4. You are attending a talk for overseas students on the history of the BBC. The speaker is Ronald Thatcher, a historian. Before you listen, look at questions 32 to 40. An example has been done for you. As you listen to the talk, answer questions 32 to 40.
The BBC is based at Broadcasting House in London, but has studios and local facilities throughout the country, which provide regional and national networks for radio and television. It was created by a royal charter and has a board of governors who are responsible for supervising the BBC programmes and suitability for the public. The governors are appointed by the Crown and are supposed to constitute an independent element in the organisation of the BBC. The daily operation of the corporation is controlled by the Director General, who is chosen by the Board of Governors and the Prime Minister. The BBC is financed by a grant from Parliament, which comes from the revenue received from the sale of television licenses. These are payable by anyone who owns a television set and are relatively low by international standards.
Under the government's reforms in the Broadcasting Act of 1990, the BBC, while keeping the license fee system, has been encouraged to develop alternative forms of funding, such as subscription pay services.
They also now must include independent productions in 25% of its television schedules.
The BBC also generates considerable income from selling its programmes abroad, and from the sale of a programme guide called Radio Times, books, magazines, and videos.
The BBC's external service, which consists of radio broadcasts in English and some 39 other languages, was founded in 1932 and receives direct financing from the government through the Foreign Office. These services have a high reputation for objective news reporting and programs. But because of a declining radio audience, the World Service began television services in 1991 to Europe on cable subscription channels and by satellite links to Africa and Asia. The BBC intends to develop the television service into a world leader. In 1994, the government recognised that the BBC's recent internal reforms and reorganisation had led to a slimmer and more efficient organisation. The BBC was given a 10-year extension of the charter, based on the licence fee, to continue its role as a public service broadcaster. Government pressures upon the BBC have thus now been reduced. Historically, the BBC has been profoundly influenced by the invention of television, which changed the entertainment habits of the people and created a dominant source of news. The BBC has two television channels, BBC One and BBC Two. BBC One programmes feature news, plays and drama series, comedy, quiz shows, variety performances, sports and documentaries. BBC Two features more serious items, such as news analysis and discussion, documentaries, adaptations of novels into plays and series, operas, concerts, and some sport. BBC Two tends to be the minority channel, watched by 10% of viewers, although it is now increasing its audience.
But it is a crucial element in the provision of open university courses.
BBC radio audiences have declined somewhat recently, but it still provides an important service. The BBC has 5 national radio channels, 39 local radio stations serving many districts in England, and regional and community radio services in Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland. All of these compete for listeners with independent stations. The national channels specialise in different tastes. Radio 1 caters for pop music. Radio 2 has light music, news and comedy. Radio 3 provides classical and modern serious music, reports and analysis, talks and plays, and news. Radio 5 provides sport and educational programmes.
That is the end of section 4. You now have 30 seconds to check your answers to section 4. You now have 1 minute to check your answers for the entire test.